We're in 1 Samuel chapters 18 and 19. We're going to come back and pick up with, finish off. Let me get my clicker here and my glasses. We're going to finish off 17. We didn't quite get that done last week. There's not a lot to say, but I got a couple of things I want to come back to, touch on. And then we'll get into 18 and 19. And 18 and 19 are just characterized by Saul trying to kill David, one way or another. He uses different methods, but Saul becomes jealous and makes a number of attempts to kill David. I want to also mention we've got two really different relationships in Jonathan and David and then Saul and David. And we'll see some characteristics of that relationship as well. Before we get started, let's pause for a word of prayer. All right. I want to back up to 17 just a minute. Bob Atkinson gave me a call Sunday afternoon. We had a good conversation. Bob and his wife Joy had the opportunity to go to the Valley of Elah on several occasions. So he got me inspired. And so I want to back up and just talk about that. If you remember, the Israelites were encamped at Soko, and the Philistines were over at Azekah. And in between is where the Valley of Elah is. And that's where this battle is going to be fought. And in fact, we got to talking about this stalemate. For 40 days, Goliath came forward and challenged the Israelites. And, you know, the Israelites, it was very clear from the text that they were afraid of Goliath. And that was their obstacle. But we kind of talked about, well, what may have prevented the Philistines from taking the offensive, being more aggressive and not waiting on this challenge of Goliath. And Bob and I got to talking about that, and he said, you know, there were a lot of trees in that period, and the Philistines were known for using chariots in warfare. We even touched on that, but he was strongly of the opinion that had something to do with it. And in fact, I got inspired, and I got to looking. One of the things I didn't look at is Elah means oak, okay? And it literally refers to a tree very similar to what we might call a live oak. And they're short, typically, and they're droopy, but they do often grow very large. And there are, in fact, trees in the region of the Valley of Elah today that are very similar to some of the oak trees we have in this part of the world that are, you know, 17, 20 foot in circumference. They reach maybe 50 feet in height, and they have a canopy of maybe as much as 75 feet. But the Valley of Elah probably was given its name because of these trees. And to give you an idea of what it looked like, I had looked before and I hadn't found any pictures, but I was able to find some photographs. And this is the view from Azekah. In other words, the Philistines' view. And notice the terrain. So you clearly have a vantage point where you can see the other hill. In other words, they were camped on opposing hills, so they could probably see the other's encampment. Today, it's an agricultural area. They farm this area. And so it looks very green and lush. Now, this is a wide-angle photograph as seen from Soko. So this is the Israelites' vantage point of the Valley of Elah. So some interesting tidbits that I had overlooked, I wanted to bring to your attention. Now, during the week, and I'm not going to go through the text, this is, you know, we have whole chapter 17 that is devoted to this David and Goliath situation and the fight. But the fight is just two verses. Just two verses. And during the week, Janice sent me a clip from one of our sisters here. This is Jessica Coleman, and she's talking about Jackson. Perhaps you know Ryan and Jessica and little Jackson. Maybe you've seen him. And we must not be the only ones studying David and Goliath. And this was probably just the week, Wednesday before last. And so little Jackson comes home after class, and Jessica asking, "Hey, Jax, what did you learn about in class tonight?" Jackson's response. "Oh, Mom," with a smile and very excited, "we learned about that little boy who got rocks and threw a rock and hit a big guy right in the head and knocked him down. Yay!" Okay? Well, what more can you say? I mean, that's it. It literally was just one blow. It was the first volley, and he was dead. He was gone. But, you know, Jackson, if you've noticed Jackson, he likes the rocks out here in the yard, as most little boys do. And so the simple fact that, you know, David picked up a rock and slung it and killed Goliath captivated him. So there's not much more I can say about that. It was a great victory. Let's look at this. Chapter 17, verse 55 through 58. As Saul watched David going out to meet the Philistine, he said to Abner, commander of the army, "Abner, whose son is that young man?" Abner replied, "As surely as you live, O king, I don't know." The king said, "Find out whose son this young man is." As soon as David returned from killing the Philistine, Abner took him and brought him before Saul. And David, still holding the Philistine's head, "Whose son are you, young man?" Saul asked him. David said, "I am the son of your servant, Jesse of Bethlehem." Now, it's interesting, neither Saul nor Abner recognized David on the field of battle. Why do you think that's, how could that be? We know that David had already been in the service of Saul as a young man. So why didn't David, or why didn't Saul recognize David? What do you think? I know it's early. Yeah, David. He may not have paid much attention to him, is what David's saying. And in fact, keep in mind that when David performed on the harp, Saul was overcome by what? An evil spirit, right? So there could have been a lot of things that caused him to be unable to recognize David. Keep in mind that David was a young boy, really, 14, 13, 15, maybe, when he first came into Saul's service. By this time, he's much older. Keep in mind that Saul is going to war. And when he leaves his home and goes to battle, most likely that is when David goes back home to tend the sheep for his father and spend time with his father. And in fact, at the battle between him and Goliath, he was sent by his father down there to deliver supplies to his brothers. Yeah, Randy? Yeah, so he's out of context is what Randy was saying. So he might not have recognized him then. Yeah.
Well, the question is, who's son is he? The question is, who's son? And now the promise had been made that the father and the one who did this would be maybe that's really what Saul was saying.
There's more to the reward, and that may have been why he needed to know. Okay, well, let me get one other thing. Young men change in appearance. Okay, this may have been several years. Saul's going off to war, and he may have been in and out. There may have been different contexts. But what happens to our young men between about 14 and 19? They change a lot, don't they? I remember Josh Welch. It was like I turned around overnight, and he'd grown a foot. You know, these guys grow up. We watch our kids change physically, and sometimes if you're not around them all the time, you forget who they are. Yeah, John. Yeah, that's important. That's along the lines of what Elton's telling us. There was more to what Saul needed to know. Let me ask you one more question here. Why do you think that Saul is so interested in David? obviously we've talked about the reward and several related issues, but why else might he be interested in David? Say it. David, he might have known already that David was to succeed him as king. She's saying that his suspicions are going to grow. And we're going to see that. I want to remind you of chapter 14, verse 52. Whenever Saul saw a mighty or brave man, he took him into his service. You remember his campaign, his throne was about war and fighting the Philistines. And so whenever he encountered a brave or a very competent soldier or warrior, he wanted him to be part of his army. Okay? Good comments.
John.
Yeah.
And also, David, due to what he had done, he was going to be a very, he was going to attract a lot of attention, and he was going to be a competitor. Saul liked to have all the attention, and he didn't like it. You know, he was a little leery of too many heroes around.
Well, it's going to be very apparent here as we go forward, beginning in chapter 18. And let's do that. Good segue. Verse 1. After David had finished talking with Saul, Jonathan became one in spirit with David, and he loved him as himself. From that day, Saul kept David with him and did not let him return to his father's house. And Jonathan made a covenant with David because he loved him as himself. Jonathan took off the robe he was wearing and gave it to David along with his tunic and even his sword, his bow, and his belt. Whatever Saul sent him to do, David did it so successfully that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the people and Saul's officers as well. When the men were returning home after David had killed the Philistine, the women came out of the towns of Israel to meet the king Saul with singing and dancing, with joyful songs and with tambourines and lutes. As they danced, they sang, "Saul has slain his thousands, and David his 10,000s. Saul was very angry. This refrain galled him. "They have credited David with tens of thousands," he thought, "but with me, only thousands. What more can he get but the kingdom?" And from that time on, Saul kept a jealous eye on David. So two really different relationships. Jonathan and David become close friends. Almost immediately, they make this covenant, and I want to emphasize this covenant. It didn't really occur to me until maybe this morning that this covenant was probably much more significant than we may be given information about. Jonathan took after making this covenant, he gave David his robe, his tunic, his weapons. You know, he had weapons and garments that were unique to a prince of Israel, okay? And certainly everybody who saw those garments and now those weapons would recognize them. So this covenant was probably significant. And in fact, it may have been a point where Jonathan is actually abdicating his throne to David. He certainly has made a covenant, and that covenant certainly included allegiance to him. There's a strong bond. On the other hand, you've got Saul and David. Saul promotes him to a high rank, but his jealousy becomes uncontrolled over time. And I want to point out that a lot of these events are just not in chronological order. So when you read 1 Samuel, and I've mentioned this before, you see sections that are more like a summary, and those summaries or those sections reach back in time, and they reach forward in time. And there may be an event that immediately follows it and another subsequent event, and the timeline gets kind of commingled. So be careful. Be wise to that. any comments? All right, let's keep going. Verse 10. The next day, an evil spirit from God came forcibly upon Saul. He was prophesying in his house while David was playing the harp, as he usually did. Saul had his spear in his hand, and he hurled it, saying to himself, "I'll pin David to the wall." But David eluded him twice. Saul was afraid of David, because the Lord was with David, but had left Saul. So he sent David away from him and gave him a command over 1,000 men. And David led the troops in their campaigns. In everything he did, he had great success, because the Lord was with him. When Saul saw how successful he was, he was afraid of him. But all Israel and Judah loved David, because he led them in their campaigns. We're going to see this process over and over. Saul's going to send him off to fight. David's going to be successful. And Saul's jealousy increases. Now, you'll notice these little numbers out on the side. Those mark attempts by Saul on David's life. And you can count it different ways. Okay? So I'll keep track of it for you. And there may be some variance there in how you interpret the passage, because in some cases, for example, this first one, when he tries to pin him to the wall, he actually tried twice, okay? David eluded him both times, but I only counted it as once, as one event. That's trivial. But I want to show you or point out just how many times Saul tried to kill David, at least in these two chapters. This was the first attempt. And note that Saul was afraid of David. Why? Why? Because the Lord had left him. The Lord had left him and was with David, and Saul knew it. Saul knew it. So Saul gives David a command, and we're going to find out that this was really a second attempt. He wants to put him in harm's way. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. Yeah, we talked about that last week, and I'm going to get to it again. I got to revisit that. But since you're there, I'll comment on it. Okay? Jill's comment is, that the Lord sent an evil spirit. I don't believe God does evil. God is good. He can't do that. But he takes advantage of Satan. And he permits Satan or allows Satan to do these things. I mean, we can look at Job's life and we can see that illustrated very, very clearly. So I can't deny, though, that it was God's will that Saul suffered. Any comments? Elton? Yes. Comment is that God is still in control, right? And we're going to see that played out. In fact, there's a couple of possibilities of things that may go on. Yeah, help. Yeah. Well, as we get to the end of the chapter, you'll see that here's Saul with an evil spirit. He's going down to kill David. He's going to Ramah. And what happens to Saul? God sends his spirit upon him, and he prophesies. So God is clearly in control. Good comment. Yeah? Well, and by the time we get to 19, what John's saying is that he hardened Pharaoh's heart. Well, we're going to see Saul's heart get increasingly more hardened as we go forward. In fact, by the time we get to 19, that's all Saul is about. Killing David, doing evil. All right. David has a lot of success because the Lord is with him. Saul's fear continues to increase. And this fear, understand, Saul fears for the throne. He's in the throne. He's the king. And that's what he's afraid of. All right, let's keep reading. Verse 17. In fact, let me just real quick refer you back to verse 8. What more can he get but the kingdom? Well, that's clearly what Saul's afraid of, is losing his throne. Verse 17. Saul said to David, "Here is my older daughter, Merab. I will give her to you in marriage. Only serve me bravely and fight the battles of the Lord." For Saul said to himself, "I will not raise a hand against him. Let the Philistines do that." But David said to Saul, "Who am I, and what is my family, or my father's clan in Israel, that I should become the king's son-in-law?" So when the time came for Merab, Saul's daughter, to be given to David, she was given in marriage to Adriel of Mahaloah. Now Saul's daughter Michal was in love with David, and when they told Saul about it, he was pleased. "I will give her to him," he thought, "so that she may be a snare to him, and so that the hand of the Philistines may be against him." So Saul said to David, "Now you have a second opportunity to become my son-in-law." Then Saul ordered his attendants, "Speak to David privately and say, 'Look, the king is pleased with you, and his attendants all like you. Now become his son-in-law.'" They repeated these words to David. But David said, "Do you think it is a small matter to become the king's son-in-law? I'm only a poor man and little known." So Saul offers his oldest daughter, Merab, in marriage to David. This was part of the reward, right? This was the reward for killing Goliath. But he places a condition on it. You've got to serve in the army. You've got to fight the battles of the Lord. And David declines very humbly. He sees an obstacle, and that obstacle is a present that would be customary in this situation. Not necessarily a dowry, but a present or a gift to the king for his daughter. And he declines very graciously. Okay? And then we fast forward a little bit, and Saul's daughter Michal loved David. But Saul saw this as an opportunity, once again, to try and kill David. So here's another attempt. And he places a challenge before David to slay 100 Philistines. And that would serve as the present or the gift to the king and would be sufficient. Let's pick up in verse 24. When Saul's servants told him that David had, or what David had said, Saul replied, "Say to David, the king wants no other price for the bride than 100 Philistine foreskins to take revenge on his enemies." Saul's plan was to have David fall by the hands of the Philistines. When the attendants told David these things, he was pleased to become the king's son-in-law. So before the allotted time elapsed, David and his men went out and killed 200 Philistines. He brought their foreskins and presented the full number to the king so that he might become the king's son-in-law. Then Saul gave him his daughter, Michal, in marriage. When Saul realized that the Lord was with David and that his daughter, Michal, loved David, Saul became still more afraid of him, and he remained his enemy the rest of his days. The Philistine commanders continued to go out to battle, and as often as they did, David met with more success than the rest of Saul's officers, and his name became well known. So, in verse 26, I want you to note that there's a timeline on this. So it wasn't enough that Saul challenged David in this way, but he put him in harm's and put him in harm's way, but he was going to put a timeline on it. In other words, you got to do it in so many days or before this point in time in order to earn my daughter marriage. So David easily accepts the challenge. He easily accomplishes the feat. In fact, he kills twice as many Philistines as he was challenged to do. Elton's grinning. Notice the pattern, though. Again, Saul tries to kill him. Saul becomes more jealous, tries to kill him. Saul gives him a challenge. David meets more success. And then Saul becomes more fearful. So now he's not only given or provided for David's great success, he's actually made him his son-in-law now. So he has a greater access to the throne now. He's actually put him in a position where he has access to the throne. Yes. What purpose does Saul's fear of David have? Think about that for a second. What purpose does Saul's fear of David have? You see, as Saul becomes more and more afraid, he continues to try and kill David. What purpose does this ultimately have? David? So David's saying that actually these challenges causes David to grow more towards the Lord. It's a good comment. It made Saul miserable all along. And his fear continued to increase, right? That's an interesting comment. What Randy's saying is that it enabled all of Israel to see David's devotion to the Lord. I want to introduce one other possibility. Okay, these are good possibilities, and there's neither a right or wrong answer here. But keep in mind that God chose David. He chose David because he was a man after his own heart. He was a young man. And like Moses, he needed for David to be developed. I believe that God, through his providence, was causing David to be developed and grow, not only closer to him, but also give him the skills that he needed as a king. You see, God wanted David to serve him. God wanted him to serve as a king like he wanted him to be, not like the people wanted to be. So obviously David was still human. He had God's Spirit, and God's Spirit protected him, but David still had to make decisions, okay? And God wanted him to be prepared to do that. I mean, it's no different than me teaching a class today versus 20 years ago. And I'm a whole lot more relaxed, number one. I've had men in my class who were PhDs, not Elton, but others who were PhDs and taught Bible like at ACU, and I just got so nervous I could hardly put one foot in front of the other.
Does Saul have choice in this situation?
I don't think he does. God's in control here. I know. That's one of the questions that just really challenges me. God, why did you choose Saul? That's correct. That's correct. That was part of the punishment, remember, for not killing all the Amalekites. Okay? God took away his spirit. That was part of the punishment. And furthermore, he's given it to David, and Saul knows it. And on top of that, Saul gave him God gave Saul an evil spirit. So it really complicates things. Yeah. Samuel gave him a good lesson. Yeah. Good comment. I got one more question here. Do we view life struggles as development opportunities? I mean, as we go through life, from cradle to grave, we are going to encounter struggles. We are going to suffer. It's just that simple. Do we look at those as development opportunities, at least spiritually? Yeah. That's excellent. Elton said retrospectively. In other words, looking back, I can say, yeah, that was a tough time, but I know it helped me to grow. I'm talking about while you're right in the middle of it. God gave us this set of emotions, okay? And we struggle with that. I mean, we may know what the answer is, but we still struggle with this issue of why. That's what Freeman's saying. Yes, ma'am. Yeah. That's true. He started to listen to other folks, didn't he? Build on it, yeah. This is a real interesting comment. It's important, too, because what she's talking about is if we allow evil a foothold, it can snowball on us. It can control our lives. And just like we're seeing what's going on in Saul's life, it can also happen in our life. It's a very important lesson. I used to think, when I was younger, that if I didn't go or I stayed away from an environment that was full of temptation, that I could be more faithful. And I don't believe that anymore. You see, I believe that temptation is all around me all the time now. And I've been working on a lesson in my mind along these lines. We talk about the armor of God. Well, I think we tend to think we're in control sometimes. You know, this issue has come up. God's in control. And we think if I just don't put myself in that environment or I walk away from that environment, I can control it. I don't believe that's necessarily true. I think all the time, we have to understand that evil is all around us. I think that's biblical. The devil walks around like a roaring lion looking for somebody to devour. That's you and me. There's something to learn from both the good characters and the bad characters. Yeah, good lessons. Let's keep moving. This is chapter 19. I'm going to talk to this and not read it, I believe. This is an interesting situation because Saul comes out of the closet, so to speak. Up till now, it's been him trying to kill David. Up till now, it's been him trying to put David in harm's way to kill him, to have the Philistines kill him. But now he basically comes out of the closet. He instructs his attendants and his son to go kill David. What happens is we also discover who's Jonathan aligned with. He's aligned with David, right? Remember the covenant that they made. And so Jonathan goes to David and he tells him, look, if you show up in the morning, Saul's going to kill you. You need to go hide. Let me go talk to David. Pardon me, to Saul. So Jonathan speaks with his father and he does a good job. Saul even takes an oath that he won't kill David. Does Saul seem fickle to you? Is that a yes? Why does he seem fickle? He's flip-flopping. Between what? He's good 1 minute and bad the next, I guess in simple terms. But he's exceedingly evil in at one moment, and then he's normal at another moment. Well said, well said. David, or rather Saul, knows that he doesn't have God with him, and he can see the fact that David does have God with him. And that's a source for jealousy and a distraction for him continuously. You've probably experienced it, haven't you, in your life? I've experienced it in my life, where you actually have an adversary. You're in a position of right. You know you're in a position of right, and yet you have got to come to a confrontation with someone who wants to do something you know is wrong or evil. Yeah, David. Do you think that Saul was sincere in his oath at the time? You really did? Why? Why do you think he was sincere? Okay, we got some who think he was sincere. Is there anybody out there that thinks Saul was insincere? That he was malicious? What do you think? Yes, sir. Yeah. Could be. Totally irrational. You just were raising your hand.
Well, I'm just waiting. I really think that he was not sincere.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he could have been malicious and already plotting how he's going to use this to advantage to kill David. Well, that's a possibility, too. Yeah, okay. I'll put it aside for now. Yeah. But it's fading fast. Fading fast. Like Eldon was describing, he's bipolar. He really struggles. And so one moment he's rational, the next moment he's not. Yeah. So he's struggling with what good is still in him versus the evil that has become him. Yes, ma'am. Interesting comment. And a mother's perspective, right? Rayanne's saying that Saul had just asked his son to go kill David. And by this time, rightly so, Saul probably knows that David is the anointed of the Lord. A tremendous conflict.
When you're chosen of God at some point, and then you have God leading you, and then you still have the power.
you know, good comment. I mean, what has happened to Saul is by design, okay? I really believe that God is in control of this and all the circumstances and what's playing out here, because he wants David to be king, and he wants him to be developed and be capable to sit in that position. So, interesting thoughts. Let's move on. We're almost out of time, and so I got to get us a couple of passages further along here. In verses 8 through 17, Israel continues to fight against the Philistines. Saul tries to pin David again. Don't confuse this situation with the prior. This is a unique and separate situation. He tries to kill him again with his spear or scepter. Michael protects David. When Saul tries to kill him, he flees. He goes home to Michal, and she lowers him through the window. Okay, and David flees to Ramah, to Samuel. Couple of questions here. Verse 11 through 17. Saul sent men to David's house to watch it and to kill him in the morning. But Michal, David's wife, warned him, "If you don't run for your life tonight, tomorrow you will be killed." So Michal let David down through the window, and he fled and escaped. Then Michal took an idol and laid it on the bed, covering it with a garment and putting some goat's hair at the head. When Saul sent the men to capture David, Michal said, "He is ill." Then Saul sent the men back to see David and told them, "Bring him up to me in his bed so that I can kill him." But when the men entered, there was the idol in the bed, and at the head was some goat's hair. Saul said to Michal, "Why did you deceive me like this and send my enemy away so that he escaped?" Michal told him, "He said to me, 'Let me get away. Why should I kill you?'" So there's actually a threat here, but I wanted to ask you about this idol. Okay, what is this idol that Michal used in the bed? This is David's house. Okay, what is this idol doing in their home? Any ideas? It could be. It could be a simple figurine, but this was probably what they referred to, or what the scholars referred to, as a household god. It was probably a religious type artifact, and yet it was in David's home. And the only reason I can think of it that she would have an idol is she probably worshipped it. I have figurines in my house. You know, I in fact, a lot of in my history, when I'd go to a country for the first time, I'd try and pick up a little trinket to remind me that I'd been there. And I have an elephant from India. I have one of these dancing frogs from Indonesia. You know, that's just a couple of examples, but they don't mean anything to me. And this might have been the case. It might have just been a household decoration. But she used it effectively, and she deceived Saul. Psalm 59. I want to call your attention to that. This psalm was written as a result of this event, David's flight from Saul on this particular evening. And let me get on the right page here. Verse 1. "Deliver me from my enemies, O God. Protect me from those who rise up against me." Verse 11, "But do not kill them, O Lord, our shield, or my people will forget. In your might, make them wander about and bring them down." Verse 16, "You are my fortress, my refuge in times of trouble. O my strength, I sing praise to you. You, O God, are my fortress, my loving God." So is this our response in times of trouble? You know, when you're going through struggles, when you're going through adversity, whatever it might be, we're all going to suffer. Is this the way you respond? Yes, ma'am. We had this little thing in Houston called Enron. You know, a lot of crazy things happen. Desperate people do desperate things. The one thing that's different is clearly there was an evil spirit that God had sent. Okay, not directly, but indirectly. It was God's will, and that was tormenting Saul and causing him to do a lot of strange things, irrational things. But the point I want to leave you with is this is out the way we should respond when we're in trouble. When we suffer adversity, we should pray to God. We should ask Him to deliver Him. We should name Him. We should pray for our enemies too. We should confess God as our fortress and our refuge. That's where we should go when we have troubles. Do we pray for our enemies when we're in distress? You know, if it's one of those situations like Freeman was talking about earlier where we're in a confrontation with someone totally opposing us, and it's very apparent they're evil and we are right. Do we pray for them? I'll leave you with that this week. Think about this model. It's worthy. We're not going to hit on 18 through 24. I'm going to be gone next week. Elton's going to cover for me, and he'll take chapters 20 and 21. Thank you. I appreciate the comments. Super class. Have a good day.